This is a Social Storytellers podcast.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are the Watchers.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers, episode 131. Tom, where are you?
Sorry, I just wandered into the kitchen for a moment to get a beverage.
Because I could hear you. I could hear activities happening, but I couldn't see you.
I'm in a different spot. I'm still at home, but I have a workspace now. So I'm in my workspace and I'm wearing headphones with a microphone. So I should hopefully sound better than I have in the last few weeks.
Amazing. Excellent. Probably one question straight off the bat that needs won't be asking is what beverage did you get?
I had a sip of Coke. Plain Coke. It's a pre-podcast treat. Beat the sleepy times.
You can see the treat that I got myself. Filled up the water bottle.
Well done.
Thanks.
Water. H2, go with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, just before we hit the record button, I told you that I'm really proud of the quiz today. I think not only you're going to like it, but I have a feeling you at home or walking or driving or wherever, I think you're going to like it as well. I'm pretty happy with it.
Bold claims. I'm excited.
If it isn't as enjoyable as I am anticipating, I'll be very angry because I had to do proper research. So if everybody could just humor me and say it was amazing, that'd
be wonderful. Will speak highly of it.
Thank you very much. I've got a few news stories. I've gotten through a couple of Netflix series and I'm pretty keen to talk about, particularly one. It wasn't a series, it was a doco, and I reckon it's right up your alley. And if you haven't already watched it, Tom, it's going to be my personal watching suggestion to you.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Bold claims. I've only got a handful of news myself. It's been a quieter week.
Yeah.
Watched a few things. There was a season finale or something, and I watched the most disturbing thing I've seen in years.
You've got me intrigued.
I watched it, so you don't have to.
Thank you.
I like to imagine. So when I play, not so much Call of Duty, but when I play all the, I'm always at the priest or the medic, or I like to run around healing people. I like to imagine that if a grenade went off, I'd try and jump on it. And that's what I'm doing for you. I'm watching the stuff that would just really not sit well with you. It bothered me, so I know it'd be a
holy cow. Okay, well, right. That puts me right into perspective.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hey, friends and potential lovers. Have you ever felt so passionately after watching a TV show or a movie but not have a pal to share it with?
Allow us the honor of keeping you company with our weekly podcast For Your Reference with your hosts,
KT
and OT.
Each episode, we break down our hot takes that you'll either ardently agree or vehemently disagree with, like subs versus dubs.
How important is a cohesive narrative?
What's with the popularity of the relatable villain?
Is it possible to be truly objective in spite of your own experiences?
And most importantly, are you getting a clue and which direction is it pointing?
Come on now, it's pointing towards For Your Reference.
That's a great reference. If you've got a little room in your rotation for some salacious frivolity, check out For Your Reference wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, let's kick off with the news stories. What have you got first?
A little bit of leaving news from people bouncing out from shows.
Yeah.
First up, we had Ruby Rose announce out of the blue that she was leaving Batwoman.
After one season, right?
After only one season. And my initial thought was, well, she'd been injured very early in the season doing a stunt. She'd hurt her back. Might be related to that. But it's already emerged that it might be more of a mutual decision between the creatives and herself, in that she hadn't really worked as the lead on a TV show before. And I imagine it's very, well, any show, it's quite demanding of your time. But when you've got to throw in the extra physicality of probably 3 hours of gym a day, that's a lot.
It is a lot. And it took a couple of days for this story to come out. Like, there was the initial, she's leaving, and everyone's like, oh, why? And then, you know, of course, people were like, oh, maybe, you know, like you said, the injury. But I feel like this might be the real reason because it sounds super honest.
Yeah, I think it's. I think this is the legit thing of, like, it'd be a ton of work. And imagine, so she moved over to Hollywood to make it in Hollywood. And I don't think being stuck on a TV show in Vancouver was necessarily the plan. Yeah. So maybe it's a bit of that. And she, look, she had great fun on Orange is the New Black because it was a smaller role. It was a guest feature. She popped in and out as needed. So
she's
I think
a few movies as well. Wasn't she in that Triple X one? Yeah.
Triple X 3. I don't remember
the title. Yeah. Did you watch it?
Nope.
No.
That's saying a lot because I watch a lot of Vin Diesel's crap.
Yeah. I remember enjoying the first Triple X, but that was many years ago.
I saw her, I think it was 2 years ago now. She might have been last year. She was in The Meg.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Giant shark.
That's right. I just wonder how this will bode for her in terms of her resume. You know, like now people will look at her potentially as someone that they don't want to get on board as a leading role, whether that be in television or movies.
I think you've called it there. That it kind of signals a certain effort. Or you know, commitment. And look, maybe that's totally cool. Maybe she is more interested in being a character actor or just being a guest actor or something along those lines rather than full time. She has always done lots of different things like DJing and all of that. Yeah. So maybe you know, who knows? The other person that left the show this week, we know a lot more about why he left. That is Skeet Ulrich, for some reason comes up with you and I more than most. We mentioned Skeet a fair bit.
More than I ever thought I ever would.
That's right. He's left Riverdale.
Yeah.
Because he says he was creatively bored.
There was also talk, though, that this new season was going to sort of focus less on the parents. So maybe that was a factor for him, that he wasn't going to get as much time.
And maybe he liked hanging out with Luke Perry.
Yeah, maybe it was sad being at work every day, like he missed him.
Yeah, because like Skeet has done TV shows in the past and stuck around for a few years. I still very fondly remember Jericho.
That's right.
Well, good show. Anyway, so both of those were from the CW. So while they renewed pretty much everything, Arrow had already wrapped up. Riverdale, I can see them just, you know, Jughead moves out. It's not a big deal that his dad's not around. Batwoman. How do you replace your lead character? Well, any other show, that's a bit of a problem. Was it I Dream of Jeannie with Darren?
Yep, that's right.
They swapped him around.
Roseanne, Becky.
Batwoman, it's easy. They've already got an in. The last crisis they had firmly established that there's a multiverse out there and they can just have someone else step into that role.
So are you saying she doesn't necessarily even need to, like the new Batwoman doesn't even necessarily need to look like Ruby Rose? Like she doesn't even need to be the same character, essentially.
They could get a 70-year-old black woman.
Yeah.
You know, like they could go turn it into Doctor Who. As bananas as that would be, find a real off-the-wall reason why every year or two, whoever playing Batwoman swaps. And, you know, maybe one time it's Huntress from an alternate universe that comes in and takes over the Batwoman role. Or, you know, there's all different female members of the Bat family Batgirl. You know, they're all different people that could step into that Batwoman role. It's been interesting that they're already throwing out casting notices for LGBTQI actresses.
Right.
Actors, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
For the role, and they're looking at it very much from that perspective. So it's cool that they want to stay correct to the character and what they established with season one. Be interesting to see where they go.
If anything, it's brought enough publicity that season two's premiere will be pretty big. People will watch because they'll be interested.
Well, they've also, a week before, they announced that the next crisis, the one that will come at what would be Christmas for us this year, if the show is back by then, this year will only be Batwoman and Supergirl. It may also tie in the new, I think it's called Clark Kent and Lois Lane or Clark and Lois or whatever the other one is. It may tie in them as well. So I think it might just be Supergirl, Batwoman and Superman or something like that, but the other shows will sit it out. I don't know if that announcement was made before or after the knowledge that she would be leaving the role.
Right. Okay.
So I could kind of, in a perfect world, she would have stayed with the role until then. They kept it quiet, and during whatever that crossover is, something happens to her and she becomes new Batwoman.
I think it's a bit of a, yeah, more to come with that story.
Yeah, more is definitely going to leak out about that. Yeah. Arguments or
something. Yeah, I think so.
It's still at that phase of a breakup where you're like, no, she was really good. Like, yeah, it sucks this has happened, but, and then you like, then 2 weeks later you find out that person's already dating.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, and, okay. That's what I feel will happen here. The truth will come out eventually.
I think you're spot on about that.
Hey, Mary. Something about that makes me think it's not actually hair gel. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
You know Cheyenne Jackson? Mm. He's an actor. He does a lot of musicals. He's been in TV shows. I know he's in 30 Rock for a little while. He's done something really interesting. And it was...
What's that?
So on Instagram, because you know how a lot of people have been in lockdown, they haven't been able to get their hair cut. So he's cut his hair and he shaved it really short at the back, and it reveals really blatantly the fact that he has hair transplant scars. So on his Instagram account, he's basically done this whole sort of blog thing saying he was dreading having to ever admit to this, but he's actually been getting, I think he said he's gotten 5 different hair transplants over the course of 17 years. When he was very early into his 20s, he started going bald. And of course, in the profession that he's in, a lot of people in his situation and career do something about it, like he has done. And whilst, you know, if you've got slightly longer hair at the back, you're able to sort of hide that. But he's just gone the full shave. Like, it's a bit shaggy up the top. It happened at a really interesting time personally for me, because I'd just been listening to a podcast, the Giant Beast podcast, and Jeff Bacala from CNET was talking about the fact that he is really super uncomfortable with the fact that he is balding. He said for the last couple of years he's noticed it and he's not okay with it. There's going to be some point, he was talking about, where he will have to, he's thinking he will just shave his hair. And there were a couple of the other hosts on the podcast saying, well, I've already done that. I came to the conclusion that that's what I had to do. And now I feel better about the whole situation. And they were talking about the fact that they're just guys on the internet. It doesn't matter really what they look like. Where you go to places like Hollywood, Broadway, these people rely on their looks. And you think about people like, well, John Travolta, like his wig has hung around for years. Occasionally he has gotten rid of it, but he's always come back to it. You know, like Aussie's Bert Newton, like he has always admitted to the fact that he wore a toupee. I don't know if he still does now, he's retired pretty much. But it's just interesting that a man in his, I think he's in his early 40s, still leading man sort of status, has admitted to it. It looked painful. That's a big scar.
Sure.
It's like a moon crescent.
Men's hair is weird. You spend the first 30 years trying to grow, well, the first 15 years trying to grow stuff, the next 20 years desperately removing it, and then suddenly realize that you want to hang on to it. One of my brothers, and I'm not going to say which one, but one of them, has he is looking the same thing in the face.
Yeah, right.
Does he thin it out a bit, or what to go for up there?
Yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah, but you know, like that's a big call for Hollywood. I imagine that sort of thing might be easier to get away with in Broadway, because you know he's performing on stage. There's never the close up.
True.
Maybe someone on a soapy might struggle with that a bit more, because there's a lot of very close up, thoughtful looking away from camera. Let's both do it together. Ready? 1, 2, 3. And we cut to break.
It's true. There's a lot of HD cameras out there, and if someone's talking to you in one of those shots, you know, those close-up conversation shots, that's the back of your head being shown. And you can't be really like, oh, is it all right if I have a stand-in just for this bit? You're like, why? I would imagine for him it's been quite liberating just to let, because now he doesn't have to hide anything unless he has to for a role.
Maybe he'll get cast in different stuff. Maybe it shows versatility if he's willing to take it off. If he's had five of them, then that means he's,
still
take it off for 6 months for a particular performance.
Yeah, that's true.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
Do you like What We Do in the Shadows?
Do I what?
Would you like more?
I'm always wanting more of that show and or movie.
Good. They've announced that it's renewed for season 3.
Awesome.
Season 2's finale is later this week. Season 2 has been fantastic. I talked a few weeks ago about the episode featuring Colin Robinson. We focused on him, on the energy vampire. The last few weeks we had Matt Berry basically had a solo episode because Mark Hamill showed up as an ancient vampire bearing a grudge for a debt that Matt Berry's character hadn't paid. And so he went on the run and came up with a brilliant disguise of wearing blue jeans with a toothpick and started running. It was basically a weird piss take on True Blood. We started running a southern bar and got really involved in the local women's netball team.
Of course
he did. It was so bizarre. They continued with the Matt Berry goodness because Nick Kroll's character, who was Simon the Deceiver, a vampire in season 1 who ran a nightclub that burned down because of a cursed hat, comes back looking for the hat. And I think it's the best action that the show has done.
Really?
Oh, my God. The fight scene at the end is just brilliant. It's really good.
Was there? I'm just trying to cast my mind back to that season 1 cameo a go-go episode. Was there a vampire from True Blood that made a cameo? I can't remember. I don't think there was.
I don't think so, no. If I remember, there was Danny Trejo.
Yeah.
There was Wesley Snipes on the
That was
Zoom.
Amazing.
Tilda Swinton. Evan Rachel Wood.
Yeah.
And maybe that's everyone?
I think so.
Did I say Danny Trejo?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, then I think that might be all.
So how brilliant was Mark Hamill?
He was so good. There was one bit where things devolve into a bar fight of him versus Matt Berry, and they both grab a pool cue. Can you imagine what pose Mark Hamill pulls? And then smashes it in half to form a cross instead.
Amazing. Because I saw him talk about it, and promote it on Twitter, and it just the vibe that he was giving off was, I had a lot of fun.
Okay. Imagine him doing his Joker voice.
Yes.
But Joker was pretending to be Dracula.
Okay. That's the voice.
It was raspy. And he's meant to be like an 800-year-old vampire who's very baffled by modern technology. it was great. I really enjoyed Mark. I always enjoy Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
He's having a lot of fun at the moment.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's sort of at that point in his career where he's come back to Star Wars. He's done his Star Wars thing. And now it's almost like he feels free just to do whatever he wants.
He's Jeff Goldbluming all over the place.
Yes, that's a perfect way of putting it. That's brilliant. Speaking of people that don't need to do anything but continue to do so, Jerry Seinfeld. So he was chatting to Howard Stern the other day, and they talked about a lot, but a couple of things I thought was quite interesting. Number one was Jerry Seinfeld probably won't do another stand-up special after his Netflix special, which is 23 Hours to Kill.
Until they back up another truck.
Well, yeah, exactly. But his excuse was exactly the same thing he said for the sitcom was, I want to get out early before people start saying, stop doing specials.
Oh, okay. I don't think anyone's told him to stop. When was the last time he did one? 2001?
It's a long time. I also, when was the, because I remember he came out to Australia as part of a while ago. Not that long ago, but it was a while ago, stand-up. I don't think he even does many stand-ups just in general. And Howard was
I saw the ad for his special, and he says, why am I doing this? You all know I don't need to do this. Why am I doing this? It's a good question. I'm sure he's got some good material.
It's been long enough, I think. Well, at least for me, to watch it and be freshly amused.
I mean, it's not like we've been missing him. He's been doing with comedians and getting coffee and cars and that.
Which has been working. I think that's quite fun. The other thing they spoke about was Howard Stern was asking him, he was kind of like going about it like, I didn't think you would ever like Andy Kaufman. And Jerry said, no, I worship Andy Kaufman. He kind of said, because Howard was really surprised that he would like Andy's style of comedy. And he said, sure. You know, the kind of, he kind of said, I like things that I don't do. I don't just like my style, which makes total sense. Like, you always hear musicians and singers say the same sort of thing.
Well, they're pretty much polar opposites. Hmm. Jerry Singh is strictly observational, real life, relatable. And Andy Kaufman was an alien.
Pretty much. And, They started talking about Seinfeld and whether Andy could have been in Seinfeld. And then he's Kramer. And Jerry said that is the only other person he would have ever considered playing Kramer. It'd be a very different Kramer, but I think it still very would have different. Been a pretty successful Kramer.
Yeah.
Because Kramer has to be strange.
A lot weirder.
Oh, yeah, a lot. It wouldn't have just been the physical weird. It would have been a lot of pausing, awkward pauses.
Yeah, I think he would have been creepy.
Yeah.
Creepier.
Creepier, that's right. But, I don't know. I think I probably would check out that 23 Hours to Kill Netflix special. Yeah. I saw another thing. This is my last thing that I saw. It's Netflix related as well. But they're going to start asking inactive users if they want to keep their membership. If you don't want it or if you don't respond, Netflix is going to automatically cancel your service. I thought this was really interesting because you'd think that companies would have like no problems in letting people just continue to pay each month, no questions asked. In the statement, they said, you know that sinking feeling when you realize you signed up for something and haven't used it in ages, but Netflix, we're going to stop all of that. They're going to start doing it. If you have not logged in for a year, they'll send you the message. And the reason I was like, why are they doing this? And then my first thought was, oh, it's to make themselves look good, because they went on to say that it's less than 0.5% that are inactive Netflix users. Netflix has got 186 million subscribers. In fact, from the beginning of 2020, they've gotten 16 million new subscribers. So 0.5% of that is nothing, but it makes them sound like the good guy.
It makes them sound good. And I think the amount of that tiny fraction, the amount of time in Netflix's eyes wasted of employees having to respond to complaints from people of, you've still been charging me. I've not logged in a year. You should have cancelled it. I reckon it would work out almost the same of, it's probably going to be 3 to 5 people's wages. It's not a huge deal, but it's a couple of people that they don't need to employ for that job at the moment. Everyone's looking to cut corners.
Yeah.
So I think there's a bit of that in there as well. It is a good move, a good guy move, but there'd be stuff we weren't like, maybe the data on those people is taking up room that they don't need, or, you know, they could use that better elsewhere. I imagine as well that there's something to do with the purity of data gleaned from recently used accounts versus people that haven't logged in a year, because Netflix would be sharing data. That's what they use to judge ratings and things like that. And so if people aren't logging in and using their service properly, then they shouldn't be considered real people. And I bet it's, you know, that sort of number as well would skew things.
Taking up space.
It makes things look way better in a presentation if they can say, we got 4% of all Netflix users to watch Extraction within the first 2 weeks of release, as opposed to we got 3.9%.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way to achieve that could be just shaving those people that skew ruin the bell curve. Don't stuff the bell curve.
I remember a couple of years ago there was a story, I think it was just before we got Netflix out here, that America were getting a price right, like the monthly fee was going to be a bit more, and people were, you know, shouting and things, even though, if I recall correctly, they had not changed the prices for years and years and years. I wonder if this is also just a little bit of a massage before maybe they do another price hike.
Potentially.
All of the above.
Yeah. If they can roll in a new feature at the same time, yep, then you're definitely onto something.
Still waiting outside a pizzeria for Fry to return? You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Look, ABC, it should have been cancellations week last week, which is, you know, it's normally a bloodbath and we find out which shows definitely aren't coming back. And that ABC renewed pretty much everything. There are only a handful of stuff that didn't get through, only one of which I actually watched, which is Schooled,
mm-hmm,
and that's the spin-off from the Goldbergs. It wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bit of fun, but
yeah, right.
They got two seasons. The rest of the stuff, they're pretty much given another go to, which is fantastic.
I did see there was a show, I can't remember what channel in the US, that was cancelled, was Kids Say the Darndest Thing. And I went, was that the third iteration of that? Because there was one
at least
way back in the day. Like, they just keep dragging it out every now and then, but it's still the same thing. They say the darndest things.
They say the darndest things. I was helping Shay with an assignment last week, and I left the room for a bit and came back to see the answers that she'd added. It was an assignment on Luna Park, which is a historic theme park in Sydney. One of the questions is, why is this place successful and why has it lasted so long? And the answer she wrote was, I don't know. The internet doesn't say. Kids, darndest things.
That's not bad.
I would have given that an A. You know, the answer, you didn't ask me to infer.
Yeah.
This is a researcher's
answer. This is an answer, and I've given it to you. If you hadn't have picked that up, the teacher would have had a good laugh at that.
I think another show that got cancelled was Emergence, which I only watched the pilot for because there was way too much stuff last season to keep up with.
What was that one
about? I'm trying to remember her name. I think it's Alison Tolman, who is in Fargo, the TV show.
Yep.
And a child arrives on her doorstep with no one knows where from. And is this... I have vague
recollections of watching the trailer.
I can't remember
well
if this is the one that everyone walks out of the water, or I don't think it's that one. There's one where there was like people from the future that were coming back to try and take over.
I don't think
it was this show. Maybe it was an alien, or this kid was... I don't know. I can't remember.
But it got cancelled, so don't start watching it.
That's right. and that poor lady can't seem to get a break, because I think she's had another show that was similar.
Damn.
That got cancelled after a season. Look, she was fantastic as a guest star on Review, the American version of Review with Miles Barlow. Yeah.
Well, that might be her. see if she can get that to be rebooted. They reboot everything else. Anything else news-wise?
No.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Right. If you've got a watching suggestion, like the voiceover man said, you can go to thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com. But you can also go to Facebook page. Just look up for We Are The Watchers. We've got Instagram account as well, which we have a lot of fun on. That's The Watchers Podcast. And Twitter at TheWatchersPod1.
I am also now accepting messages that are screamed into a swarm of bees.
Swarm of bees.
Which is exciting.
Will wasps work too?
No, and definitely not murder hornets.
Oh, no, they're the worst.
Only swarms of bees, because bees will land and chitter and dance, and I'll understand their communication. Everything else, speak up.
Yeah.
It's the swarm. It's the whole bee. I don't need a queen. Happy for drones.
Okay.
But you'll just make it happen. Send me that swarm of bees.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. What have you been watching this week?
I watched two heavy things that I'll talk about and one thing that I really enjoyed. So should we start with a heavy?
I think heavy. Let's go heavy, light, heavy, and then I'll continue with a light. We'll try and mix it up.
I'll go heavy, you go light.
Okay.
I'll go light, you go heavy.
Okay.
I'll go heavy. Something like that.
Got it.
So, okay, I'm going to kick off with the finale of Dark Side of the Ring was this week, which is the behind-the-scenes documentary series about dark moments in
wrestling's history. Mm. And this week's episode was all about Owen Hart, mm-hmm. which is one of the most tragic stories in wrestling. I watched it live back in 99 on the pay-per-view that happened. For those listeners who don't know, at a wrestling event in 1999 during a live pay-per-view, Owen Hart was dressed as the Blue Blazer, which was a ridiculous character he was doing at the time. And part of this character's thing was he would come down from the rafters on a pulley system. Basically, he was up in the gantry and was about to begin being lowered, and something happened and it dropped him 100 feet smack into the ring. And he didn't die instantly, but he died very quickly after in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. This was all being live televised in a pay-per-view event. They basically cut over to the commentators and stayed on them. And it's still really, really difficult to watch now because these guys are talking, you know, trying to cover live television while a friend of theirs lies dying feet away.
Did the live audience realize?
No. Damn. And they had to keep saying that this was not a work. And it was at the time, it was not long after wrestling had come out and become known as sports entertainment.
Right.
And at the time, the stuff they were doing was so outlandish and over the top that it could have been a stunt, like not a clever one, but it could have been. And it's difficult, very difficult to watch. And it's kind of a very taboo subject in wrestling. They don't talk about it too much because it's so awful. And this really just got into it warts and all, and it mainly followed his wife, of course, his widow, and the cause she took up afterwards, because she discovered that when they first started doing this character, they were using a very professional rigging company from Hollywood that worked on, you know, Disney on Ice and all the right. big live touring shows these guys worked on. And after it had been done a few times and everyone knew what to do, it was decided that they would use local rigging crews because it would save cash. And it looks like when a local crew was being briefed, they were told that they wanted a particular carabiner that was known as a fast release, because when you got to the bottom of the drop, you could unclip this very quickly and run away, because up till now the character had dropped down and then had to wait till someone could unclip them. And unfortunately, it looks like this rigging crew perhaps used a carabiner that's generally used for sailboats and yachts to really quickly let the boom out. So instead of something that would hold him tight and then let go when he chose, the second they began the system, it let him go. So this is stuff that had never really been talked about. So I understand why they kept it for their season finale.
Yeah.
But my goodness, it was a tough watch, because it was not like any of the other episodes, which were, you know, years of pain led to pain medication, which led to alcoholism, you know, people building and building to a dark place. This instead was a guy, he was the youngest of 12 siblings who were all involved in wrestling in some way. And he was a big, big, big star, and just, you know, nothing untoward. Wow. Anyway, this show is amazing. I don't like these serious docos too much. Linz is all over them. They get a bit heavy for me and stuff. But I have come back to this one excited every week. It's not been emotionally manipulative, but the stuff in there is emotional enough that it hits without the narrative having to really twist things. It does a pretty good job of showing different sides of the coin, and it very rarely points the finger at someone like a Vince McMahon and says this man is 100% to blame. It talks about how he is part of a culture and he is the, you know, the figurehead of that culture. Yeah. He certainly steered things in certain directions, but that behavior is the culture. It's not all top down sort of stuff. So very strong recommendation from me on this show. There's two seasons of it now. Who knows when it'll be back for another, but it damn well better be.
Sounds like there's got to be a lot of research in each episode, so it might take a while. But sounds like it's worth the wait.
They're the real killers who turn the lights off on Tony Soprano. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Now, this is the show. This is the show that I was talking about, that I was about maybe 10 minutes into it, and I thought, maybe I should text Tom and ask him if he's watched this. Because it had all of these people in it that I was like, this is something Tom would watch. It was called Have a Good Trip, Adventures in Psychedelics. It's a documentary on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing.
Okay, I haven't watched it yet because I was going to watch it the other night, and then I started watching that crappy US celebrity Gogglebox with Lynn's instead.
Oh, Tom, you're going to love this one. Like, there's no shock that Sting's in it, but there are other people like Rosie Perez. Her story's amazing. You've got Reggie Watts. You've got Thomas Lennon, Will Fort, David Cross, Carrie Fisher, Natasha Lyonne, Anthony Bourdain.
I heard that Paul Scheer plays Rob Corddry, and Rob Corddry plays Paul Scheer.
It is the most Tom part of the whole thing. It was very funny. Ben Stiller's one of the producers, and he also tells a story. I don't want to give too much away with it because it's a great story, but it involves him calling his dad. Which is quite good. Obviously it's taken them years to make this because there's a few people in that list that I went through who are no longer with us. Sarah Silverman's in it. You've got Judd Nelson.
Nice.
Yeah, so many people. And it's such an interesting way for this topic to be presented to you because it's made by comedians. Yet it's still got all the history and what you need in a documentary about psychedelics that you're still interested in what they're telling you, but you're also like, yeah, get to the bit. This is really funny. Nick Offerman plays a scientist in it. He's ridiculous. He's sprinkled in with actual scientists.
This does sound very up my alley. Look, you know I love a good story recreation show. I burn through a lot of that stuff. I love hearing other people's stories, but also observing their storytelling techniques and comedians. It's what they do.
And
okay, cool. All right, I'm jumping on that.
There's some amazing animation in it, and I was really intrigued that these people were so openly willing, I don't know why I found that word difficult to say, to tell their story. And I think it's because they were working with people they know very well and have for years.
Yes. I think as well, because they're comedians, they're used to not, you know, if it's a good story, it gets shared.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how bad it makes you look. Hello, Hannah Gadsby. The worse you look, the better you can do out of it. Do you know? So I get why some of these, do some of them kind of half brag about how crazy it's
like? Yeah.
Okay, good. That's the sort of story I'm wanting.
Yeah.
No.
The tone is exceptional. The ones that I love, the Carrie Fisher, the Anthony Bourdain, the Rosie Perez, they were my three favourites. So I'll be interested to see which three you thought were hilarious.
Sure.
Yeah.
I already know the Rob Corddry, Paul Scheer thing because I follow Paul Scheer on Facebook and he's fantastic. He was very involved with Lost back in the day. Anyway, he showed a little snippet of it and I was like, oh, I got to check that out.
Yeah.
So thank you. That is a great recommendation. I'm very excited to check this out.
Proper watching suggestion for you. All right, so we've gone dark, we've gone light. Should you go dark again?
Yeah, let me just get this out of the way.
Yeah, this is the one you had me worried about.
Oh, yeah, I watched Butt Boy. Remember a while ago I talked about there was a movie coming called Butt Boy?
I remember.
Yeah, and there was, you know, a lot of people go, oh, it's very clever, and go in sight unseen. So I was like, all right, I'm going to media blackout on this completely and enjoy it properly. Because every now and then there's an indie comedy that you do that with that blows your mind. Mm. And this, unfortunately, was not that film. So it was made, I didn't find this out until afterwards, but and it changed things for me slightly, but it is made by some guys. They're a sketch comedy group, online sketch comedy group. And basically it's a 1.5, like an hour, a 90 minute, one joke stretched that time, but told in like a really low budget, high art indie film style. So long lingering shots and beautifully composed, colorful sets and stuff. So it's about this guy who's an office worker drone. He's wife is pissed at him. He just stumbles through life and he's getting to a certain age. So he has to go for his first prostate exam. And during that exam, it gives him a jolt of excitement that he hasn't experienced in years. And then the film is like a metaphor for alcoholism. He gets the compulsion to start sticking things up his ass. And, yeah. You know, it starts with a bar of soap in the shower and then progresses to the remote and then the family dog.
God.
And this is still like the first 5 minutes of the film and you're like, oh, this is kind of funny. And
you've hit absurdist there, yeah.
It's very absurd. But then he's walking through his local park and a little boy wanders off from the mother and then suddenly we're watching the news and it's a news story about the little boy going missing.
Right.
And he then attempts suicide in the shed. And it doesn't work out, but then the credits start and it's 9 years later and he hasn't touched a drink. I'm putting that in inverted commas.
Right.
He hasn't touched a drink since. And he attends AA and he gets paired up with a new AA guy as this guy's sponsor. This guy is a detective who, lo and behold, is looking into missing children's cases.
Mm.
And so it becomes a bit of a cat and mouse game as to whether he slips up again,
mm-hmm.
which he does,
yep.
clearly, very, very quickly, and as to whether this detective can catch him out. And, like, they're both very, very broad stereotypes, and there are some moments in there that made me laugh and some shots that are very, very clever and put together. But I couldn't get past the fact that this guy's kind of he's a child sex offender.
Yeah.
And it just made me dirty. So some people are really going to love this film and it is a sick joke pulled the whole way out.
Mm.
And if you enjoyed the comedy of Human Centipede, then this film is really in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But
yep.
no one told me that was the style of comedy I was settling in for.
Right.
So it's not all fecal jokes all the time and stuff, but it is so unsettling.
Uncomfortable. And it does,
yeah, it builds and builds and he starts getting bigger and bigger things in there and then we see it, we see what he does and
You think it would have been more palatable if it was, because you said they came from like shorts, YouTube or something, shorts. If it was short, a short film, if they could pack in all the ridiculousness into that, was it because it was so drawn out that they had to add in?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. Like the drawn out and the commitment to the joke is so impressive.
Right.
And that's why I'm not just straight out hating on this
film. Yeah, I get you.
They've made a beautiful looking film and
yeah.
it, like there are shots in there and the tone and the pace of it very much reminded me of Primer, that time travel movie that was made for $7,000 that I love.
Mm.
So it is art and it is done well. It's just so unsettling that it has stuck with me afterwards and not in a great way.
Yeah. Yeah.
They achieved their goal. They wanted to be unsettling. And so it could have been like this literally could have been a 30-second or 2-minute skit and they could have hit the jokes really hard and it would have been good. But I admire the commitment and perseverance to telling a very vulgar joke in such high art form.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So I get why people some people are flipping for it and saying it's hilarious. You're welcome to find that. All good. I didn't myself, but I'm not going to hate on the film because these guys worked real hard. It shows. And I'm excited to see what they do next.
Mm.
And I think that's the mark of something really good because, as I say, this is not a bad film. Is it a film I enjoyed? No.
Yeah,
but
I get
really
you.
I really admire it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's this is why I needed to get to that one because it's hard to talk about. And I haven't even touched on what the final third of the film is.
Mm.
And that's where everything they've set up as the joke builds to and it comes to a very logical, hard to deal with and visually disgusting conclusion. But, yeah, I'm really torn about this film. Anyway, Butt Boy.
Butt Boy. Like, even the name itself doesn't give you an indication. Like, it gives you the completely inaccurate indication of what this is going to be. On, you could take it many different ways.
Yep.
Let's go on a slightly more hilarious track then. I watched this movie maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I just haven't gotten around to talking about it. I'm pretty sure you've seen it. It was from last year. It was Good Boys.
Yeah.
That's a fun movie.
My first thing I have to say is, what is up with the really tall kid? That scream happens a lot. It's a very high-pitched scream to be coming out of a boy.
I reckon he did it. He did it in a scene, and they've gone, we need to write this in. You need to be doing more of this, because that sound shouldn't be coming out of you. What I enjoy about he's the best character in the whole
Agreed.
Movie. 100,
Agreed.
Like, hands down. But one of my favorite scenes from with him in it is the one where they're sitting in the frat house. And somebody from the frat house goes, oh, aren't I in a class with you? And because he's like pretending to be like this older boy, and he's pulled it off, but he doesn't want to be an older boy. He just wants to do normal things. Why do we have to grow up? He's a great character. My highlight is them trying to cross the freeway.
Oh, yeah.
That was very funny. If you want just a movie that's ridiculous and fun and remind you of all those 80s and 90s movies that you watched growing up,
it's super bad with preteens.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a perfect way of putting it.
I really enjoyed that movie.
I got some good laughs out of it, and I knew that you'd watched it. And I knew that you had enjoyed it, and I thought, all right, I'm gonna give it a burl, and I was really glad I did.
Have you seen Booksmart?
I have seen Booksmart, and I think I like Booksmart more.
I feel like they were a nice companion.
I like Booksmart more
as well, but they kind of work together.
Definitely.
It was nice to see two different takes on Superbad, one with ladies, one with younger guys.
They would be pretty good as a double feature. Good Boys, then Booksmart.
Agreed.
Mm.
Because Booksmart involves a lot more drinking and and looseness and whatnottery.
Whatnottery?
What nottery. I'm trying to remember Jacob Tremblay, the main
kid. The main kid, Max.
He's been cast as a voice in something. I can't remember what.
Let me have a look.
Was it Harley Quinn? Is he the kid on Harley Quinn?
No, oh, by the way.
That's the kid from Goldbergs.
I forgot to say to you about that psychedelic show. I am withholding a couple of names from you because I want you to enjoy the surprise when you see these people.
Ooh.
So, yeah, Harley Quinn. He's Robin in Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Wow, what a deep cut pull that was from
very
me.
Impressive. Dr. Sleep as well. I feel like I've heard of that.
Dr. Sleep was the sequel to Shining.
He's in that. What else have you been watching?
He's the kiddo from The Room. The Room.
Room?
Isn't he? Yeah,
in my head, I was thinking Panic Room, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And then The Room.
I said The Room.
You said
and then
The
I was
Room.
Like, Jacob Tremblay, you're tearing me apart.
I've got one more thing I can talk about, but I know that you have got a lighthearted watching suggestion.
Yeah, I watched the premiere of Stargirl, and it was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
Yes, so I've been a bit on the fence of it in the past because she's not my favorite character. She's not a big tier character, and I hadn't followed it too much. And I was under the impression that it was largely being financed by the CW or co-financed with the DC Universe app, which will in time become HBO Max or some very convoluted behind the scenes. I didn't know who was really making the call. And some of the trailers and stuff had made it look like it might be, you know, Riverdale, Supergirl-ish, a little bit twee, I don't know. And then I watched it, and no, it's way more tone like Doom Patrol.
Or,
some of the other DC Universe shows where, you know, there's a bit of swearing in there, a little bit more adult and this sort of stuff, but it's kind of bonkers. And Luke Wilson is in it. Brother of Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
Yes.
From Legally Blonde.
Yes, from Legally Blonde. And old school and Idiocracy. I like He's great. And so he's playing a character named Pat, who is just a very much an everyman, who is recently he's just got married to a lady, and they and their two kids are moving to a small town in Nebraska together, back to the new wife. The wife is played by Amy Smart from Road Trip and
Best Friends.
All sorts of great things. So they're moving back to this town, and we slowly learn through the episode that Pat actually has a bit of a past, not as a bad guy, because it's the episode starts off with a huge fight in, like, I think it's meant to be in 2005.
Right.
Of the JSA, the Justice Society of America. So not the JLA, which is Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Justice League. The JSA was traditionally back in the 50s and it, 40s, 50s. It was formed after World War II, all this sort of stuff. And they were the characters that the Watchmen were kind of based on.
Right.
That first superhero team, but only a few of them actually have any powers. There's a guy named Wildcat who's just a real good boxer and he wears a cat mask, this sort of stuff. Luke Wilson's character's name was Stripesy. Because of all the stripes that he wore.
So he looked like a burglar or an umpire?
He was Starman's sidekick. And by a sidekick, we kind of realized it was more like assistant or butler.
You.
He drove the car. So and this big fight is happening with a team of villains at the beginning of the film, at the beginning of the episode, and one by one we see the Justice Society all die. And Starman comes in at the very end to try and save everyone, and it's Joel McHale.
Mm.
And he dies horribly.
Oh.
And he's laying there dying in Stripesy's arms, and he gives him the rod, the cosmic rod, the power. He's like, you've got to take this. And Luke Wilson's like, oh, I can't do it. He's like, no, I don't mean you. You've got to take this to find someone good. It can never be you. You're a good friend, but just not you. And like, die.
Thanks.
Right. So then we realize that he's got this kind of chip on his shoulder, and he's clearly looked for people but also hidden away. And we don't know yet why he's moving back to this town, but he's got the rod with and stuff. Anyway, throughout the course of the episode, the teenage daughter of his new wife starts getting drawn to the basement. Something's drawing her there.
I wonder what.
And she doesn't know who her father is, and because he left before and he was meant to visit her the night that Starman died. And so there's a pretty damn good chance that John McHale was her father and she's meant to inherit this power. Anyway, she gets the rod and goes out into town a little bit. I should say goes out. It drags her unwillingly out, and she's a gymnast. So it starts helping her do all these cool gymnastic moves. It's very rare that you see someone having such joy with the power, their new power, straight away. You get it with Spider-Man when he goes out and starts swinging around and this sort of stuff. But most people, I'm thinking X-Men and mutants. You shoot laser beams out of your eyes. That's not fun. You've got to find a way to stop that.
Mm.
She's having so much fun with this new power. She gets noticed by some of the villains that did all the murdering back in the day, and it might have kicked things off very poorly. And then she gets stopped by a giant robot out of nowhere, and it looks like the Iron Giant. Like,
all right,
It looks like a cartoony giant. And this deep voice is like, I told you not to go into the basement. And it's Luke Wilson.
Ah!
And by Stripesy, he had a striped robot. And it's the car that he's been driving around all episode. It's like he has a Transformer car. And that's the end of it. Like, I'm so on board with this show. Oh!
That is the Thomas sounding show I've heard of in a while.
There's not too many superhero stuff that does the generational thing.
Mm.
You get it a bit in Black Lightning.
Yep.
And any time that Batman movies want to think about Robin and his presence, you get a little bit of the idea of the succession plan.
Mm.
But it's very rare to get this sort of setup where you've got the transference of power of lineage, but then you've also got someone who's kind of an Alfred to help in that situation, but that Alfred also has their own weapon system and used to be a hero, so can give it. It's a very unique setup.
It's like the slightly uncool uncle.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. So. Who she now has to call dad.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's it, and he does not realize that the woman he's married very well may have dated his boss's, you know, his ex-boss type thing. It's fun.
That sounds and, like a fun setup.
It's really fun, and there's something about having Luke Wilson and Amy Smart because they both have a slight, well, Luke Wilson more, but they have that southern presence and that southern accent. But setting in Nebraska in a smaller town, it really plays to that sort of strength and that tone that they're going for. Of because the JSA were in the 50s, they're often seen as being a little bit, shucks.
Yeah, you know, I get you.
They're old school. So it infuses that and yet kind of plays with that and makes a parody and flips it at the same time. It's a hell of a lot cleverer than I expected it to be. And I, with everything else wrapping up, it might be just behind Legends of Tomorrow on my pull list for first thing I'll watch when it downloads. Oh,
amazing. And it's just nice to see Luke Wilson and Amy Smart and stuff again, because I always like those two.
Solving mysteries, rewriting histories. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I watched the whole entire season, the second season of Dead Like Me, with Christina Applegate. Like, the first season was great. They were very much doing the comic book thing where the end of the episode or the end of the page, there was a real twist or something where you're like, I've got to watch the next one. How is that even a thing? How are they going to get out of this? Season two just goes, right, that worked for us. We're going to do more of that, but they're going to be more batshit crazy twists. Some of them you just be like, what? If this was any other show, I would not accept this as, I'd be like, nah, that's stupid. But they lay into it so heavily. They're all so committed to the ridiculousness that as an audience member, you're like, I'm along for this 100%. And the twist at the end of this, well, not even the twist, but the cliffhanger at the end of this season, you're like, holy cow. What is going to happen? I don't even know how this is going to work now. But if you thought Christina Applegate was amazing in the first season, this season, she's just gone next level. It's very rare that you will see her in a scene without a bottle of wine or a glass of wine. She's very funny. She swears so much to anybody. It doesn't matter who you are, you're getting the F-bomb. I mean, Christina Applegate, for me and for a lot of us, has been around ever since. She started off, for me, in Married with Children, and she's been in stuff ever since.
For me, it was Don't Tell Mum the Baby's
Yes, Dead. Classic movie, where she was a teenager.
Do you think that still holds up?
I doubt it, but I'm willing to give it a shot. I remember she had impressive eyebrows. She's toned them down a bit. I've always given her a lot of time, but I think I personally have been underrating her acting ability.
She is the secret weapon of Anchorman. Like, to be able to stare down Will Ferrell, you've got to be a comedic giant. I got so much time for her.
Yeah, you're right. She's got the comedic chops to take it on. There is this wonderful reference to her and Married with Children that took me a while to get, because I was like, is that who I think that is? I'm sure they cast this Married with Children actor just so that people would be like, oh, that's, they used to be
bit
in.
Bit of stunt casting.
Absolutely. But it works.
Love it. Love it.
This show is so unapologetic with its, like I said, it's batshit craziness, and there's 100% gonna there's a third season.
Nice.
Whenever they get to make it.
In that way.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a lot of watching suggestions for us.
That was good stuff. You had personal suggestions to me. I had Your Mileage May Vary.
Yeah, but I'm glad that I'm glad I know where to. where that movie Butt Boy sits with me now.
Yeah. This is why I say I watched it so you don't need to.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be keeping an eye on those people. Anyway, I'm moving on. I'm not going to think about that film anymore because I've dedicated too much mental space to it.
Too much. Let's get into the quiz. This quiz is called Name the Movie Based on the Review. So these movies are not new. They're from all over the time. But I have found a review from the time it came out.
Oh, this sounds up my alley. You're right. This does sound like
it's a fun one.
Quiz.
And to make it not too difficult, I've given an either or option. So at the end, I'll give you two movie options and you can pick between which you think is the accurate one.
Wonderful.
The movie is like getting a box of Cracker Jack, which is all prizes. It's an assemblage of spare parts. It has no emotional grip. Is the movie Star Wars, A New Hope, or the Fast and the Furious one?
It's Fast and the Furious.
It's Star Wars.
Star Wars, New Hope, not Phantom Menace or something.
New Hope.
Wow.
That is what Pauline Kael from The New Yorker said in 1977.
Called it Pauline.
Yeah.
Top of the class.
That's right. Yeah. It's fun to look back on some of these. All right. Let's go for this one. There's a lot of little smiles with many chuckles and grins, but they don't add up to much. The movie is like a series of the cartoon that it's inspired by, in which each individual line or image is self-contained. I was mildly entertained, but I was hoping for the big laughs, and with one exception, I didn't find them. Is this movie Dick Tracy or the Addams Family movie?
Oh, Dick Tracy.
It's the Addams Family movie from 1991. Roger Ebert. Ebert didn't like it.
What are you doing, man?
He didn't like it.
So wrong.
We'll see how you go with this one. The best shot in this film is the first one. Not a good sign. The film begins dramatically with the camera swooping high above a dark and stormy sea and then circling until it reveals a lonely figure sitting on a cliff overlooking the surf. The shot leads us to anticipate dread, horror, and atmospheric gloominess, but alas, it's not to be. Was this movie I Know What You Did Last Summer or Ghost Ship?
Ghost Ship.
It's not. It's I Know You Did Last Summer.
Oh, man.
I had to watch a trailer for Ghost Ship just to see if there was anything that looked like that could be the beginning. I've never seen it.
I've seen both of them.
I've never seen Ghost Ship. I thought I had, but I don't recall any of it.
I thought, Know What You Did. No. All right. I thought it started with someone walking across the road, but there's preamble before that. There's party to get them drunk driving. Yeah.
So that they can go and do that naughty thing.
Mm.
All right. I've had to redact the name of the company.
Okay.
Look for this company to be awash in a sea of green thanks to this gloriously animated blend of classic fairy tale elements and broad humour. This movie may represent its best animated feature since Jungle Book in 1967. Is this movie Finding Nemo or Little Mermaid?
Little Mermaid.
Yeah, Little Mermaid.
Finding Nemo's Pixar.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the time, Pixar wasn't owned by Disney. All right, good. You're trying to trick me
there. See, I had to take the name Disney out. Otherwise, you would have gotten that too fast. But you still got it.
Still got it. Little Mermaid, what a film.
Yeah, great movie. We've got two more left.
All right.
This is an Australian movie, by the way. This movie is particularly disappointing because recent Aussie micro-budgeted films like Love and Other Catastrophes have demonstrated it's possible to be creative with rock-bottom resources. Film crew's lack of expertise in cinema is evident and is likely to deter all but those most indulgent from enjoying the film's very specific humour. Is it Muriel's Wedding or The Castle?
Oh, it's got to be Castle.
It's The Castle. David Stratton said
that. It's The Castle. Yeah. Because I've met David a few times over the years and I remember him disliking that film.
Isn't that funny?
Yep.
Such a classic.
Amazing film.
Last one. This movie is the worst of the worst. The latest offering from DC Comics superhero universe may be the most disastrous yet. And that's saying something. Is it Suicide Squad or Batman versus Superman?
Oh, my God. I'm going to say Batman versus Superman.
It's Suicide Squad.
It could have been either. Is that from my review of both of
It's from the Atlantic newspaper.
All right.
Back in the day. I think
that was a great quiz.
I think we'll have to do one like that again soon.
That was a good flip up of the format.
Yeah.
Because while you were saying it, I'd get an idea in my head and I'd jump in and say, is it this? And it was never that film.
I think you got two right. Yeah, you got two. Two out of six. That's probably either I've done too good a job or, yeah, that's the stumpiest that I've given you in a while. A lot of fun. If you've got any fun quiz ideas, you can always send them into thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com. Tom, I think that's
good. I will not accept quiz suggestions via Swarm of Bees.
No, because then you end up getting the answers at the same time. And it's just not worth it.
I will let you whisper them to a duck.
A duck in water or a duck out of water?
Dealer's choice.
Fantastic. I love it when you get that choice. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us, I think. Tom, on that note, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. This week, there's no silly thing. It's just hang in there, everyone. We're doing great.